This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. More and more Americans are living in multi-generational households, three generations or more under one roof. People do this for financial reasons, emotional reasons, or both. But many were not expecting to be living this way at this time. Our colleague David Green has been getting to know three families like this, and we're going to spend much of the next 8 weeks with them in a series called Family Matters. That's because these families face almost every kind of financial decision, including possibly decisions like the ones you face. David Green, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve.
So who have you met?
These three families you mentioned, they're really living out these stresses and pressures in so many different ways. And I want to get right to their voices so you can really get a sense for who they are. And let's start in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And you're going to hear now the voice of an 87-year-old woman named Annabelle Bowers. Her family calls her lovingly Snootsy. So she has two granddaughters who have literally opened their homes to her. She lives half her time with one household, half with the other. These are families, Steve, that are dealing with all these other pressures. You know, how much money to put away for retirement, how to pay for college for their kids. And Mrs. Bowers, she knows she's adding to their pressures. And when I spoke to her, she did something that we've actually been hearing a lot. She broke up the tension in the room with a little bit of laughter.
How do you feel when you see your family taking care of you? Like,
Well, I hate it. I just feel like I'm a burden, but the girls don't even think that way of me. I make their day. Miserable, but I make it.
So, Steve, we'll get to know that family. Now let me take you to another family in Maryland, right outside Washington, D.C. There's a 24-year-old named Nicholas. He's living at home. He was exploring this career in the arts, but when his grandfather, who's in his 80s, started really suffering from dementia and moved in, Nicholas has been thinking about trying to find a career that'll make him more money so he can help out with the family. And everything is so fragile under this roof. Nicholas had a friend staying over one night, and when his grandfather, who has dementia, woke up and saw this unfamiliar face, it just threw the whole day off.
I had a friend on the couch, and Grandpa came out of his room. He automatically asked, "Who is that?" And that was what threw everything off. So from that point on, it was, "No, I'm not getting in the car. No, I'm not going to daycare. No, I think I'm going to stay here today," like whatever the case may have been.
And threw everything off, Steve, meant that family members had to decide whether to skip work that day, to take care of Grandpa, and that brings with it all sorts of questions about, you know, making money that day. And finally, the last family we're going to meet is right outside Baltimore. It's these three generations of women, and in the middle is Geneva Hunter, and she lives with her 90-year-old mom who has fallen ill. And Geneva is dealing with a lot of emotions. But one, she's watching her mom fade away, which is something that so many people in her generation are confronting today. But she's also watching her own daughter sacrifice everything, including a job, to be the caretaker, to take care of her grandma full time.
I've always wanted the very best for her. I want it even more now. I do want her to go back to work and be happy. I want her to have her life back.
And so, Steve, just some of the voices we'll be hearing, those are voices from three different families who will be following.
Amazing. You hear people having to change careers, people missing work, people going through this process of slow, slow grief. Is this something that any of your families expected to happen to them?
No, and that's really what we've been hearing about. I mean, families can do all the preparing and think that they're on top of everything, but when an elderly family member falls ill, when something happens, there's this flashpoint where you have to decide, you know what, the best option is just to bring everyone together under a single roof. All the financial questions, all the emotional stresses, these families say they just had no idea what to expect, and they weren't prepared.
Well, maybe this series of financial stories over the next 8 weeks is going to help a lot of people in that situation and inform many people besides. David, stay with us. I want to bring another voice into the conversation. Paul Taylor is Executive Vice President of the Pew Research Center. He's been doing demographic research on families like the ones we've been hearing. Is that right, Mr. Taylor?
Yes, we have.
How common are the stories you just heard?
It's becoming more and more common. We estimate that about 1 in 6 Americans live in multi-generational family households. That's 54 million Americans. If you go back 30 years to 1980, only 28 million Americans. Hmm. So this phenomenon has doubled in size in the last generation or so. And it has been spurred in recent years by the rotten economy that a lot of people are having to cope with.
People just can't afford to live independently. Children can't get jobs and older folks can't stay independent.
And you know what? It turns out to be a very successful unofficial anti-poverty program. families living in these circumstances, if you look at their overall median income, it is lower than the national average, but they also have lower poverty rates. They have figured out a way to pool resources, to make do, and to stay above a floor of poverty, better than other Americans in their same economic circumstances.
Now, let's not assume it's all bad. There can be something heartening about this. You're staying close to your parents. You're staying close to your grandparents. But it's also given rise to this term, the sandwich generation. What is that?
The sandwich generation are people in middle age, and it happens to be a very large generation. That's the famous baby boom generation that was born right after World War II, 75 million. They're in their late 40s to their early and mid-60s. And they have a greater likelihood than any other generation their age to have living parents. They also have a greater likelihood to have not only minor children that they're still caring for, but young adult children they're still caring for, because we have the phenomena of either the boomerang generation or the never-launched generation, the 22-year-old, the 28-year-old, the 30-year-old who's having trouble finding that first job. So the caregiving is not done grudgingly. The caregiving, as you say, is generally done quite lovingly.
Mm. Now, we got started on this series because people here were talking about financial literacy, about the difficulty people have in navigating the increasingly complicated financial decisions that they face. How knowledgeable do you think people are about the financial decisions that they're making and that they have to make day to day?
You know, my guess is, from looking at the data, that people who wind up in multi-generational family households weren't expecting it, weren't planning for it. But, you know, there's a great line from Robert Frost, "A home is the place where when you have to go there, they have to take you in." Hmm. People run into circumstances, whether they're older and they're in failing health, whether they're in middle age and they've lost a job or their homes have been foreclosed on, whether they're young adults and they can't get started, and they have to adjust. It is the ultimate social safety net. I think some of it has to do with a tougher economy, so you have to double up. Frankly, some of it has to do with the fact that in terms of money, most of the household wealth in this country is parked at the upper end of the age scale. There's a lot of wealth. This is the healthiest and wealthiest generation of older people we've ever had. So while there is a lot of caregiving that boomers give to their elderly parents as their health begins to fail, there's also a tremendous amount of financial assistance that the elderly parent gives to the boomer.
So we're going to be learning right along with these families and with NPR's David Green, who's still with us. And David, where do we go next week as we begin this 8-week journey?
Steve, we're going to spend some more time with the Shimon Gilmore family from outside Washington, D.C., and that's the family of Nicholas, the 24-year-old you heard from. And it's interesting, I hear Paul Taylor talking to you about this idea that the caregiving is not being done grudgingly, it's being done lovingly. And one of the real questions that this family faced and a lot of families in the country face is, you know, if you decide to think about a nursing home or, in this case, an adult day center, you know, if that's the reality for your family, you have to do that because you can't care for an elderly parent, you know, 24 hours a day. You need to keep a job. But can you still offer loving care to this member of your family while using a facility like that? And we're going to take a trip into an adult day center in Maryland. And so that's what we'll be exploring next week.
Looking forward to it. David Green is our correspondent. Paul Taylor of the Pew Research Center is with us here. And the series is Family Matters. You can follow the series online and see photos of all the families we're following at npr.org.